From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. This week, Trump in trouble, Hillary up in the polls, that cash to Iran, Zika in Miami, and the Olympics rollout. Republican candidate Donald Trump dug hole after hole for himself this week. It all started with Trump's attacks on the Khan family, who lost their son, an American soldier fighting in Iraq. Trump attacked the family, the father, here the mother, on ABC's This Week.
If you look at his wife, she was standing there. She had nothing to say. She wasn't allowed to have anything to say.
In a break with tradition, President Obama, the sitting president, called Trump unfit for his job.
Yes, I think the Republican nominee is unfit to serve as president. I said so last week, and he keeps on proving it.
And travel warnings now in a neighborhood of Miami where 15 cases of Zika have been discovered. A frustrated Florida Governor Rick Scott spoke with reporters about the failure of his Republican Party-led Congress to act more swiftly to fight the outbreak.
Who didn't know that we're having travel-related Zika in this country? And I mean, that's been going on since early this year. Who didn't watch what was happening in Brazil? That's been going on for a little bit longer time. We knew this was going to happen.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Lisa Desjardins of the PBS NewsHour, Glenn Thrush of Politico, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What is happening this week with Donald Trump? How do you see the millions in cash sent to Iran? Are you dodging Zika in Miami? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Arlington, Virginia, is Lisa Desjardins. She's political director of the PBS NewsHour. Lisa, it's great to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Great to be here.
With us from Washington, Glenn Thrush, chief political correspondent, senior staff writer for Politico, also host of the Politico podcast Off Message. Glenn, welcome back.
Great to be here.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Lisa, and Glenn.
Let's just listen to a few of the Donald Trump moments that got him in deep this week. Here's a montage. Everything from babies to the cons to the Purple Heart and rigged system and the elections. Here's Donald Trump.
Don't worry about that baby. I love babies. So I love babies. I hear that baby crying. I like. Actually, I was only kidding. You can get the baby out of here. That's all right. I think she really believed me that I love having a baby crying while I'm speaking.
When you have radical Islamic terrorists probably all over the place, we're allowing them to come in by the thousands and thousands, and I think that's what bothered Mr. Khan more than anything else.
He said, that's my real Purple Heart. I have such confidence in you. And I said, man, that's like big stuff. I always wanted to get the Purple Heart. This was much easier. We're running against a rigged system, and we're running against a very dishonest media.
Glenn Thrush, what has happened with the Donald Trump campaign this week?
Do you have 3 or 4 hours?
Oh, we have one.
Listen, we are dealing with a candidate who defies historical trends on any number of levels. I have been in this business for 20 years. I have never seen a candidate have a week comparable to what Donald Trump has had. Now, this isn't just the Furies being released after him having 9 or 10 months of reasonably positive blanket cable television coverage. This is a matter of someone who is so intransigent, so confident in his own ability to stay the course, that he has an inability to adjust to very rapidly changing times. He is continuing to shoot from the hip. The two conventions could not have been more diametrically opposed. They could not have had different outcomes. You know, to me, the Republican convention in Cleveland was like a Hieronymus Bosch painting, and the Democratic convention in Philly was a Norman Rockwell. And I think this contrast between light and dark, the Clintons have been enormously successful in painting Trump as having a pessimistic vision of the future. And then he proceeded to make a series of pratfalls, self-induced injuries that I think is unprecedented in the modern history of presidential campaigns.
And, of course, people went straight at him, the president, saying he's unfit for the job that President Obama now holds. I don't know if there's any precedent for a sitting president doing that. Trump's suggested that elections might be rigged in November. Here was President Obama.
Of course the elections will not be rigged. What does that mean?
But it wasn't only a Democratic president sitting in the Oval Office talking like that. Here was a news conference. This was Tuesday. Chris Christie, who has stood by Donald Trump on many an occasion, talking about how it was inappropriate, said Christie, to criticize families, talking about the cons here, who've lost children to war, soldiers.
The idea of me losing any one of our four children is unthinkable. And so you're not going to find me being critical of Mr. and Mrs. Khan, no matter what they do, even if I may disagree with any one particular statement they might make. It's just inappropriate.
And then you've got, what, Warren Buffett, the billionaire investor. And yes, he's supported Democrats over the years, but doesn't say he's not a card-carrying Democrat, going hard at Khan, bringing up an echo of the old McCarthy hearings against Joe McCarthy when former Army Counsel Joseph Welch accused McCarthy of having no sense of decency. Here's Warren Buffett.
I asked Donald Trump, have you no sense of decency, sir?
Lisa Desjardins, you have Republicans now. Meg Whitman, a big figure in Republican fundraising, bailing, saying she'll raise money for the Democratic side, for Hillary Clinton this year. You've got Republicans in office now coming out and saying no to Donald Trump. You've got the polls widening for Hillary Clinton. Is that just a post-Democratic convention bump for Hillary Clinton, or is something bigger? Was there a – I've heard Republican analysts say train wreck this week. Is that what we're seeing, or is that too simple?
I'm always careful to draw conclusions about the Trump campaign 1 or 2 days after Donald Trump has said something, because I think his voter base still is still likes him because they still think he is speaking straight from his heart. Now, Democrats like him for the same reason, because they feel like that's a problem for his campaign. I think what happened this week, to echo what Glenn was saying, is you had a slew of stories, by my count, 10 different stories that were problems for the Trump campaign. The Khan family, as you said. Also, Mr. Trump's comments about Ukraine and Crimea on Sunday, just 5 days ago, but that was a big story as
well.
Remind
us what that was. Remind us of that.
That's right. Mr. Trump said, you know, Mr. Putin's not going into Ukraine. George Stephanopoulos, speaking on his Sunday show, said, but he's already in Ukraine. And when you parse that out, it seems that Donald Trump was it implies that he believes that Crimea is part of the Ukraine now, which is a sharp turn from current U.S. policy, which says that Crimea is part of sovereign Ukraine. That's a major issue.
You mean he thinks it's part of Russia now, you meant to say.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, part of Russia. Thank you for correcting me.
Just giving it
exactly.
away there. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yes. He's assuming that it's already part of Russia, and he's saying Vladimir Putin won't go any farther into Ukraine. That really raised questions about not only his foreign policy views, but his foreign policy understanding. Same time, politically, he refused to endorse Paul Ryan, taking a jab at Paul Ryan, who said he was going to think over or wasn't ready to endorse Donald Trump yet. Donald Trump returning the favor. But, you know, it's different when you're a sitting Republican nominee lashing out at a Speaker of the House who really hadn't said anything about you recently. He's lost Republicans. As you mentioned, there are five now sitting members of Congress who say they are not voting for Donald Trump. Four of them have their own elections, and three of them are in battleground states, which tells you they are calculating that it is better for them to openly oppose Donald Trump for their own job. This morning, we had Mike Morrell, the former acting director of the CIA, come out and say for the first time in his career, I am endorsing a particular candidate, and it is Hillary Clinton, because I think Donald Trump is a threat. It could go on and on. Melania Trump had an immigration issue. We had that Purple Heart incident. Donald Trump keeps talking about fire marshals, lashing out at them at his events. So
why?
I think what we saw
what does
this
that
week,
have to do? Why fire marshals? Aren't they keep us safe?
Yeah, this is what he's frustrated that more people are not allowed into his events. And he believes that the fire marshals are acting politically and blocking the crowd. Fire marshals across the country have said, no, this is an issue of safety. But this just shows that Donald Trump is now in a mode where he is reacting very quickly to things large and small. And it seems to be costing him in the polls this week largely.
Jack, I'm struck at how conservatives already expressed deep misgivings about Mr. Trump. But this week, just pulling out all the stuff, Peggy Noonan in the Wall Street Journal, very conservative columnist there, talking about what she describes as, quoting her here, his undignified and ungrateful reaction to a Gold Star family, the Khans, the odd moment with the crying baby. She says, Mr. Trump expresses himself thoughtlessly, carelessly on issues like Russia, Ukraine, sexual harassment, saying he wouldn't be surprised if the November election were rigged, on and on. The unprecedented assault of Obama on him, but saying Trump firing back, not at Obama when he said he was unfit, but at Paul Ryan and John McCain. And Peggy Noonan, conservative columnist, talking about the mad scatterbrainedness of Donald Trump. She says, here's the truth of life. When you act as if you're insane, people are liable to think you're insane. Now, this is not some Democratic critic.
Fresh.
And she says, what's become
obvious, probably fatally so. I don't know about that. But she writes, Mr. Trump is not going to get serious about running for president. There are no hidden depths. There will be no pivot. This from a conservative commentator, Jack.
Yes, and the title of her piece says everything. The week they decided he was crazy. And yet, you know, there's also been some good news from Mr. Trump. I mean, his haul of direct mail, small contributions in July, 80-odd million, according to one report, nearly as much as Hillary Clinton, and more than Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. if you subtract from her total what she's giving to the Democratic National Committee and others. And then also WikiLeaks. Julian Assange was interviewed this week on Lisa's program, The News Hour, and he said that he's very opposed to Hillary Clinton being president, and he thinks that she's going to get she's a hawk, and that he has plenty of things to keep leaking, and stay
tuned. He just wants to out of house arrest, in effect, there, right?
That's right. And, of course, we also found out this week that among the things that the Russians seem to have hacked are Clinton Foundation emails, which, you know, one of the conjectures about Clinton Foundation and Mrs. Clinton as Secretary of State was that there was some connection between Bill's fundraising and her decisions as Secretary of State. Are we going to find any of that? WikiLeaks may play a big role in the election.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. Trump in trouble this week. Hillary up in the polls. The $400 million in cash to Iran, Zika in Miami. And the Olympics are on as of opening ceremonies on this Friday night. Glenn Thrush is with us, chief political correspondent for Politico. Lisa Desjardins, political director for the PBS NewsHour. Our own Jack Beattie is here. You can join us. What do you see going on in the Trump campaign? What about on the Clinton side? What do you make of the midnight shipment of $400 million cash to Iran? Was that a ransom? And I guess, is Hillary Clinton out of bounds, claiming that the FBI did not refute her public statements on her emails, the server, and all that this week? Of course, Hillary Clinton more than happy to jump in on Trump's problems this week. Here she was responding to his comments about the Khan family during a campaign stop with reporters on Sunday already.
To have Trump do what he did, I don't know where the bounds are. I don't know where the bottom is.
It wasn't just the Democratic candidate, though. Here's on Fox Business on Wednesday, Newt Gingrich saying some of Trump's behavior over the past few days had been very self-destructive.
Trump is still behaving like as though it was the primaries and there were 17 candidates. He has not made the transition to being the potential president of the United States, which is a much tougher league. People are going to watch you every single day. They're going to take everything they can out of context. And he's not yet performing at the level that you need to.
Newt Gingrich on Donald Trump. And here's his own running mate, Mike Pence, after Trump declined to endorse Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, for his reelection campaign. Here's Pence coming in strongly for Ryan.
I strongly support Paul Ryan, strongly endorse his reelection. He's a longtime friend. He's a strong conservative leader. I believe we need Paul Ryan in leadership in the Congress of the United States.
Let's go right to our callers. Marlon in Austin, Texas. Marlon, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Yes, how you doing?
All right. What do you see?
Well, in my opinion, I do believe that Donald Trump at this point is trying to save face. He's not the kind of person that'll quit. So versus just saying, I want to bow down out of the election process, I think he's doing a lot of self-destruction. And at the same time, if he loses, he can still say, hey, you know what, I ran a good fight and I lost. But I think deep down, he doesn't want to be president. He just doesn't want to quit at this point.
Marlon,
that's just my personal opinion.
I appreciate your call. Glenn Thrush, what about that? We hear all kinds of speculation this week. There's talk of a Republican Party intervention. I don't even know what that would mean exactly with the Trump campaign. There's talk of somebody of him dropping out, somebody else stepping in. Marlon says, he'll go out his way. He doesn't want it. Read that range for us.
Well, let's talk about this intervention first. The two interveners were to be Newt Gingrich and Rudolph Giuliani, whose recent history with presidential campaigning is not precisely stellar. You know, Gingrich had a good moment in South Carolina in 2012, but ran a really pretty low-level campaign. And Rudy Giuliani staked his 2008 Republican presidential campaign on winning Florida. It was a one-state strategy, one of the most notoriously bad strategies. Not only that, Rudy Giuliani then went on TV and accused Newt Gingrich of leaking the intervention story. So the interventionists started to intervene on each other before they had a chance to tell Donald Trump any of their wise counsel. Here's what the larger point is. This man has done this on his own. He has made this campaign entirely about himself. And by the way, before the Philadelphia convention, a senior Clinton person said to me, we are going to win this by making this a referendum on Donald Trump. We'll see if he's stupid enough to go along. I think we have the answer on that. And I think the issue with Trump is, and we're going to see this time and time again, because the candidate acts as his sole only surrogate, with the exception of his children, he has no one out there to defend him when things go wrong. What you're seeing this week is this extraordinarily precise surgical attack on Trump by a succession of credible Clinton surrogates, starting with Warren Buffett on the financial stuff and concluding this morning, as Lisa said, with this really unprecedented editorial by Mike Morrell in the New York Times, in which he says Donald Trump is an unwitting agent of the Russian government.
This is the former top of the CIA talking here.
That's right. And the longtime number two, and by the way, somebody who has served both Republican and Democratic presidents and is regarded essentially as kind of the man in the gray flannel suit over at the CIA.
Lisa, Clinton surrogates, mm-hmm. maybe there are plenty of them lined up there. I suppose you could see it that way. But then you've got straight up Republicans. Meg Whitman here mm-hmm. and the five sitting members of Congress that you identified. What about the Republican side of this equation? How do you see Republicans taking on what's coming out of the Trump campaign and responding? You know, some are saying it's time to actively say no to this candidacy.
I think you got close to the question here, which is, what is a Republican? When you ask, is this your man, Republicans? What is a Republican? We've known that this and fracture in the Republican Party, it's been evolving for years. Now we are at a breaking point over their identity. And when you talk to, I think it's important to bring in the view from ardent Trump supporters and those who are most firmly in his camp. I talked to a senior Trump official 2 days ago as all of this was sort of coming across, the idea of an intervention and this idea that the staff was melting down. And that person is a true Trump believer, experienced in politics, who said to me, we do not think these so-called Republicans, Meg Whitman, these members of Congress who are voting against Donald Trump, we don't consider them conservatives. So this sort of gets back to not just Donald Trump, but a bigger issue in the Republican Party, which is who are conservatives. They think these are moderates who support their claiming they don't want. At this point, I would think any presidential candidate wants as much support as they can get. But that's precisely the problem for the Donald Trump campaign. He is digging in and he is saying, I want my supporters. And he's appealing to them more than ever. His camp seems to also be embracing that and saying, this is who he is. We don't even want Meg Whitman. We're not worried about it. Well, the polls show that they need to worry about something.
What do the polls say this week, Lisa? What kind of lead is Clinton opening up? What's the range?
You know, I don't pay a lot of stock in exact numbers, but mm-hmm. the thing that I'm paying attention to is what's happening in the swing states that will determine this election. I won't get too nerdy on everyone, but in order to win this election, Donald Trump needs to turn around some 64 electoral votes from what Barack Obama won. That's a pretty big amount. He can do that by winning Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida. But we're seeing polls in Pennsylvania not going his direction. We're also seeing other swing states, New Hampshire this week. Hillary Clinton has a very large, more than double-digit lead there. And we're seeing this in other places. That's the real problem. He needs to win these swing states to win the Electoral College. And the numbers are going the other direction for him right now in those major kind of dozen or so states that we believe are in play.
Glenn, you've got Trump supporters who talk about wanting to break out of the sort of party headlock, even their own Republican Party kind of way of doing things. On the other hand, I'm hearing more conventional, I guess, Republican analyst Todd Domke, I heard this morning, talking about what's going on here as an extinction-level event for the Republican Party. Are we breaking into new terrain, or are we just destroying something old, or do you see the Republican Party bouncing back 6 months from now from the season of Trump, and on goes the parade?
Look, I mean, the issue here is the Republicans controlled the redistricting process largely through the intervention of Ed Gillespie prior to the last census. I mean, subsequent to the last census. So they are doing very well at the state house level, at the gubernatorial level, and congressionally. And even with a Trump cratering, they're very likely to hold the House. I think you've hit the big question. Frank Luntz, by the way, somebody who had run a lot of focus groups during the campaign showing Trump's strength within the Republican Party, sounded the alarm also this morning. But that is a really valid question. I had a long sit-down with Ted Cruz on the eve of the Republican National Convention, which he really telegraphed the fact that he wasn't going to endorse. And, you know, these Cruz conservatives who have been spurned and treated really poorly in a personal way by Trump. And also remember, Trump said early on in the campaign that he considered the party not to be the conservative party, but the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. I think some of those chickens are coming home to roost. Now the question is, if Trump is not going to win, and right now Nate Silver at 538 has him roughly with an 18% chance of winning the election.
Boy, it was 37% when we sat down with Nate at the GOP convention.
It was 37, and it got up a little bit higher than that. We're kind of defaulting back to where it started. But if that happens, I think we really are going to have an issue where there's going to be an existential question about the presidential level. The one thing I would say is candidates in this country make parties. If we have a really strong Republican presidential candidate 4 years from now, and Hillary Clinton, presuming she wins, has not had a successful term, this candidate can unite, a very good candidate can unite a party very quickly. The question is what happens in the intervening 4 years.
John in Detroit. Thank you for calling, John. You're on the air.
Good day, everybody. I'm self-employed. I go to a lot of blue-collar jobs, like construction jobs. Like one person is for Hillary. And in the polls, how do they know what all these guys and out are thinking? I don't understand that. Businessman, Ross Perot was the last time I voted. And money, why send it? What is Donald? He doesn't need it. He's got our vote. You know, we're going to show up, too.
Hey, what about all the things that people are up in arms about this week, John? All the things that Donald Trump has said, do they bother you?
He's pretty unpredictable, and, you know, perhaps he needs to brush up on that. Yet, you know, you can't badmouth someone who's lost their children, and he didn't really badmouth, but he's unpredictable, but it's not going to make or break. He's going to be president. It's that simple. He's everything that Barack is not.
Why are the people that you've visited at blue-collar work sites, why do you think they're for Trump?
More of the business end of it. And honestly, Hillary is, you know, from what we hear, we don't really know, but she's corrupt. And I mean, when you're under investigation constantly, perhaps you're doing something that's not right.
John, I really appreciate your call. Jack Beatty, there's the word from the Blue Collar Work site where John doesn't find anybody who's voting for Hillary.
Yes, one study of Pennsylvania, the polling there, shows that Mr. Trump is doing well, actually, in the southwest part of the state. He's drawing in those voters that John is talking about. He's also doing very well in the Scranton area. But when you look at the Philadelphia, three counties around Philadelphia, he is losing these counties, and there are a lot of Republicans there, more affluent Republicans, better educated Republicans. He's losing those counties by 40 points. And he's losing Pennsylvania by 11 overall in this Franklin Marshall poll. That's an example of his, I think, a paradigm of his problem. Can he get enough of the aggrieved, resentful, economically populist white working class vote to offset the hemorrhage of more affluent areas, perhaps even more affluent Republican areas? And in Pennsylvania, that's not happening.
Wayne in Dayton, Ohio. Wayne, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. Just real quick, I don't believe Donald Trump's going to be attending the first debate. He will become gravely ill. He is the petulant child who will refuse to lose, so he's just going to upset the whole board game. And he will be forced to leave because of ill health. We'll never know why. It'll be a secret, like his financial records. Mr. Pence will be the candidate, and he'll pick his running mate. I think that's the only way the Republicans will survive.
Wayne, I appreciate your call. Glenn, what about a refuse-to-lose scenario here? How do you pick? If the polls don't go well for Trump, and who knows? Things could change. They could turn around. But if they don't, this is a guy who puts it more or less full stock on winning. How does he deal?
Look, I agree with the general the general idea of knocking the marbles off the board. I don't think Trump is going to drop out. I think that's a fantasy that people have. I do think, however, I completely agree with the caller on the idea that Trump is going to pull out of one or more of these debates. I had Jeff Rowe again, who was Ted Cruz's campaign manager, on.
And there's only three debates, aren't there?
Exactly.
How do you pull out of one or more of them and still be seen as at all credible?
Well, remember, Trump had this one of the things Lisa and I and Jack haven't mentioned was this phantom letter from the NFL that Trump apparently claimed that
they had a conflict. They didn't want him to do it, but the NFL said, we didn't send any such letter.
Of course, and the nonpartisan commission for setting up these debates established these dates months and months ago. So he knew about it months and months ago, but he is going to look for, I think. And I have some, my reporting has borne this out a bit. I think he's going to pull out of one or more of these debates because these side-by-sides with Clinton, and by the way, I should say, back in the spring when Clinton was really flailing around, her and her staff were really terrified about the notion of going up against Donald Trump in a debate. Hmm. I think that dynamic has changed significantly. And I think Trump, if you look at Trump's behavior against Cruz, after Cruz really started going after him in the primary and the field was narrowed down, Trump pulled out of that Fox debate. So Trump would rather, I think, take a powder, take the accusation that he's chickening out, then sit in on it. And the other thing about it is this whole rigged system argument, which is now being buttressed by Sean Hannity, who has one of the biggest bullhorns on the right. This is the exit. This is the psychological exit strategy for Trump. So he doesn't really have to pull out physically. He can just claim the whole thing was rigged.
But how, on what basis? Let me get a call here. Hartford, Connecticut. John, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
My point was, I mean, in America, we pride ourselves on a peaceful transition from one presidency to another, one party to another. Everyone ends up being good sports. They're sorry they lost. But to set the stage ahead of time for saying that the thing is rigged, I think even Richard Nixon felt the election was stolen from him by John Kennedy in Chicago. But he cared about America enough to say, I'm not going to push that. It's going to be unprecedented.
I really appreciate your call, John. Lisa, on what basis could someone say rigged? I mean, as President Obama pointed out, you know, like President Obama or not, elections are organized locally and on the state level. I mean, what do we mean? What would rigged even mean?
This brings us to one of the more important and I think more long-lasting stories of this year, which is about voter ID and voter rights, and which has been a long-running battle, which has now boiled, like so many things, right up to the surface of this election. And what Donald Trump is saying is he believes that there is massive voter fraud. He has quoted some
Nobody
statistics.
Backs that up. I mean, we had all these
That's
court
what I'm
decisions
saying. Yeah,
this
exactly.
week and recently—
The statistics do not bear that out. The stats that he has pushed, we can't find any authoritative reference for anyway. And in general, we know of the hundreds of millions of votes cast in America, we only know of a few dozen, an infinitesimal percentage of those votes that seem to be in some way fraud, much less the one person voting 10 times, which is what Donald Trump is claiming. But I'm not saying that he's right, but I'm saying this is the argument he is trying to make. And exactly as Glenn said, this is his exit strategy. This is his reason for why he loses if he does lose. He's setting that up right now. But in the meanwhile, the courts are actually making real decisions about voter ID laws, and they are pushing back against the most restrictive voter ID laws, in some cases saying in North Carolina, all but saying that they were straight up racist laws. So those changes are important to watch, not just for this election, but for the future. Donald Trump is making his own arguments.
Jack, in a word, damage to the system if he would go out with that kind of allegation of rigged, or does he just go off looking flaky if that's the way things roll?
Well, we had, you know, people have been worried about what if he wins. Now you have to worry about what if he loses.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, 16 people killed in a hot air balloon crash in Central Texas. Eyewitness Margaret Wiley described the fireball to NPR.
I think the pops that I heard was the balloon connecting with the lines. And by the time I looked that way, it was already on the ground. And then the fireball went up.
An AP survey of research said the health benefits of flossing were unclear. Here, New Jersey dentist Wayne Aldridge pushed back.
You want to keep your teeth, brush and floss them. It's that simple. I mean, if dentists do it, we're doing it because it's the right thing.
And the Olympics kick off in Rio tonight amid reports of bacterial contamination. The World Health Organization has warned athletes participating in open water sports not to swallow the water. Jimmy Fallon went to town with that on the Tonight Show.
Doctors are telling swimmers not to put their heads underwater. Athletes asked how they were supposed to swim with their heads in the air, and doctors were like, oh, no, you don't breathe in the air. That's even worse. That's worse than the water.
We're looking at a week in the news. Trump in trouble, $400 million to Iran. Zika in Miami. The Olympics are on. Glenn Thrush is with us from Politico. Lisa Desjardins from the PBS NewsHour. Jack Beatty's here, and you can join us. Is Hillary Clinton out of bounds, claiming the FBI did not refute her public statements on her emails? Are you freaking out that we've got Zika transmission in Florida now? That Congress left town without fully funding the U.S. response? And what will you be paying attention to at the Rio Olympics? Zika, doping, terror threats, the beautiful sports themselves. Jack, I want to look at Hillary Clinton for a minute here. I mean, she was better in the polls this week, but there was this moment. This is an interview on Fox News Sunday. She said that she's told the public a consistent and truthful story about classified material on her emails, and she said FBI Director James Comey backed her up. Washington Post and PolitiFact both called that untrue. Four Pinocchios, they said. Here's the soundbite from Fox News.
Director Comey said that my answers were truthful, and what I've said is consistent with what I have told the American people, that there were decisions discussed and made to classify retroactively certain of the emails.
Jack, is there some lawyerly, subtle nuance of truth in there, or is she just denying what we thought we heard from Comey?
Well, note the passive voice. There were decisions discussed and made to classify. I mean, who is making these decisions? What is she talking about? And why on earth, this long after the facts have been established, is she still claiming that her statements have been consistent and are consistent with what the FBI director said? They are not, as you said. The Post gave her four Pinocchios for that, and she looked right at the camera and effectively lied or stonewalled or displayed. You know, we talk about Trump's personality. We saw something about hers, an incapacity to admit by a very intelligent person the most elementary contradiction and lack of fit between her explanation and the facts. And there were things she could have said, like, well, I spoke too carelessly. Yes, there were some, and as it turned out, there were some classified material there, but you know, they classify things that maybe shouldn't be classified. All kinds of things like that could have been said. Instead, she looked at the camera and just said, I don't see any problem here.
Suzanne in Merrill, Wisconsin. Suzanne, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm heading to a cabin in northern Wisconsin. No plumbing, no electricity, no running water. Just a little old 1800s cabin and a cool, deep northern Wisconsin lake for swimming. I think it'd be nice if everybody took a swim in a cool, dark, deep lake. It gives you thinking time. I think it would be wonderful if I could hear on the media discussion of 12 or 15 of the most important issues and could hear from the candidates what they'll do about, what will they do about the cost of health care? What will they do about education, about crumbling cities and infrastructure? What will they do about militarization in the world? Give me some substance, please.
Suzanne, you're making us jealous with your cabin and your lake, but what do we do when you've got a candidacy, at least one, that isn't really putting that kind of detail out there, Suzanne?
They're both not putting any of that out there. And they both have problems, and they both have positives. But, you know, when it comes right down to it, you could go to sleep right now and wake up on election day and read for 3 hours about the 12 or 15 important issues that really matter to the function of our society and the world, and then you could vote based on what you read, if you could get to what they would actually do.
Suzanne, we've got it, and please take us to your cabin in the woods and your deep, cool lake. We all want to go there. Glenn Thrush, is there some failure here to keep the public focused on real decisions and choices around fundamentally important issues to this country that the media is missing in the sort of daily, weekly uproar over this and that latest comment? Or are we on a kind of policy-free terrain here in some respects?
Tom, we never miss anything. I mean, this is all about substance all the time, right? Look, first thing, I just want to fundamentally disagree with the caller on one thing. I agree with her larger point. Hillary Clinton has put out reams of specific policy. The Democratic platform, for instance, is essentially, it reads like machine code. So I think there is, as Tom pointed out, a distinction between the two campaigns and the two parties in terms of the granularity of their solutions. And part of that is because Hillary Clinton is a policy person, and it's actually sort of a weakness of hers. Bernie Sanders has criticized her for this, the fact that she is too granular and too much about tweaking programs. But in general, I think there's a huge opportunity cost to this election and the personalization of it around Trump. And that is a lot of these issues that he's raising, particularly America's place in the world, particularly Obama's acceptance of a somewhat diminished role of America's role in the world. I think these are really substantial questions that could have been addressed in a much more fundamental and informative way for the American people. And we're losing that in this sort of tangerine wave of emotion.
That's a big loss. A lot of talk this week about the money that went to Tehran. $400 million in cash from the nuclear deal with Iran was forged earlier this year. And Donald Trump saying this was ransom for the four Americans who were within hours of that delivery were released. Here he was in a rally in Maine last night. Talked about that, exactly that handoff of the cash.
$400 million gets flown at night into Iran. I think it's so sad and so disgusting. And you also wonder about a government, who can approve a thing like that? Would they take cash into a country and just hand it to them? Bushels and bushels of cash.
Now, he also said he saw that on film. He's since walked that back. That was something else. But Lisa Desjardins, what about this characterization? The White House is saying, look, this was money that was owed to Iran from all the way back when the Shah was booted out. And yes, we delivered it because we didn't have any formal banking relations. We couldn't just send an electronic transfer. But really, middle of the night, same day, more or less, jet straight from the U.S. to cash and mixed currencies to Tehran. Is this statecraft or is this ransom?
I think the biggest problem with this story for the administration is that the Justice Department actually recommended that the Obama administration not deliver this $400 million at the time that it did, when we knew that American prisoners or hostages were being returned. They said, this will look like you are paying a ransom for them. But the State Department overruled the Justice Department, and they went ahead with the payment. I think what you said is exactly right. This is money that that the U.S. owed Iran. This has been litigated at international courts for decades. And the timing of it really is the question. Not only was it near the same time as the American prisoners were returned, it was the same day. And I think it definitely raises fair questions. Now, Donald Trump has had some inaccurate statements about this, but I think this is certainly something to look at closely. I want to get back to the caller, Suzanne. Mm-hmm. First of
yes,
all,
please.
Suzanne, DM me the location of your cabin on Twitter. I will be there.
I don't think she's going to Twitter today, at least. I think
yeah,
she's
probably
going north.
Not. That's true. True. But I think she's right. It is time we are craving. I am craving to talk about issues, and I think she's going to find that will be out there. I'm not just shamelessly plugging NewsHour, but we are beginning an issue series now every week for the next. We have 14 weeks left, folks. Mm-hmm. 95 days left in this campaign. Mm-hmm. It's time to look at issues. But I think one of the challenges we all have here, Tom, is that Donald Trump right now, he only has 7 issues mentioned on his website. And some go into more details than others. Most of them don't go into a lot of detail. So it is our job to evaluate that. But this, again, speaks to the unprecedented nature of this election. As Glenn said, Hillary Clinton has a library's worth of policy details, from autism to internet technology, on her website. Donald Trump is at the exact opposite end of the spectrum right now.
Jack, what do you think, though? I mean, as Bernie Sanders said, too much granularity from Hillary, missing the big sweep. You clearly have voters, and some are lined up with Bernie Sanders, and some are lined up right now with Donald Trump, who want a kind of bigger response to the moment they perceive in this country's national life. And I don't know if that's is there something bigger than what you would actually do? But maybe there is, in terms of theme and approach.
Well, Trump, I think, really doesn't get enough credit for being a very successful thematic politician. He, make America great again, restore law and order. those messages are clear. Hillary's message depends upon the hour of the day, almost. I mean, there's a superfluity of messages, and that has always been that dogged her campaign in 2008. What do you stand for? Well, a little of this, a little of that, a little of the other, and it is the other side of the wonk, which is on the one hand, on the other hand, and she doesn't quite get to the big thematic. What could it be? Her husband said, building a bridge to the 21st century. Well, we're there. And her motto of stronger together somehow doesn't quite do it in terms of messaging.
And yet, Glenn, I mean, she stood before the Democrats at the convention. She said, let's be optimistic. Let's just one step at a time hammer this together in a better way. I mean, Bernie Sanders said, let's go for revolution. Donald Trump, in his own ways, says something similar. I don't know what he would deliver. But if you want progress, maybe she's got the recipe.
Yeah, I mean, that is her fundamental argument, And it's funny. On the eve of the speech, I happened to be hanging out in the Clinton Hotel, the Clinton staff hotel, and I ran into one of her senior advisors who'd been working on the speech. And I said, what's the speech going to be like? And the person said, long. And they were totally right about that. It was a very sturdy speech. She tends to sort of string stuff together. My colleague Annie Carney had a wonderful story a couple of weeks ago about Hillary's own war with her speechwriters. Every time they put in an interesting line, she tends to take it out. That's not the way to do this. But at the moment, compared to Trump, her vices are virtues. Her sturdiness, her granularity, a lot of these things which redounded against her in the primaries are now looking pretty good. Again, I'm skeptical that all this is going to last. It's going to look quite as dark for Trump and quite as good for her. But at the moment, the fundamentals seem to be favoring her approach.
Lisa, can we talk for just a moment here about Turkey? This real high tension here between the U.S. and Turkey right now. A lot of talk this week about Turks believing that the U.S. was somehow behind the failed coup attempt there. A big crackdown there now, and they want the extradition of this Turkish opposition leader, Fethullah Gulen, who's in the United States. That's right. The U.S. going to relent on that front and send them the guy who's kind of the biggest critic of the government, who's safely outside Turkey, outside the reach of Erdogan, leader of Turkey right now? Will the U.S. give him what he's shouting for?
Thus far, the answer is a very clear no. Mr. Gulen lives in Pennsylvania, and he has stridently said he has played no role in the coup attempt against President Erdogan. Now, other than, of course, he is a very outspoken voice against an opponent of Mr. Erdogan. Mm-hmm. I think there are a couple of things going on here. This is involving international policy, U.S.-Turkey relations, which are some of the most important for the U.S. in that region. But it's also involving what's happening within Turkey right now. Mr. Erdogan is clearly cleaning house, is maybe how he would put it. His opposition would say that he is persecuting and arresting political dissenters. And I think it is a very important moment to watch the next phase of the Erdogan administration and how he treats his own people, and then also how he continues with this against the United States.
We're going to really dig into the Turkey story here on Monday and look at Turkey as a NATO member and how that still stacks up when there's so much tension now with Europe, with the United States. Zika in Miami this week. Everybody dreaded this, and now we've got, a dozen or 15 cases of transmission within the United States, not brought back from somewhere else. Here was a news conference in Miami yesterday. The head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, this is Dr. Thomas Friedman, said he's encouraged by the pesticide spraying in part of Miami where those local transmissions have been found.
It's difficult because this mosquito also lives indoors. So one of the things that we don't yet know is, will the aerial spraying effectively control all of the mosquitoes in an area? And that's why they'll use a combination of a chemical that kills the adult mosquito and a chemical that kills the larval form of the mosquito.
But everything we've heard so far is it's very difficult to do this remote. You can live in a thimble size or smaller. It's out during the daytime. It's inside, not just outside. We'll see how Miami grapples with this. We had Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, on CBS's Face the Nation, saying his agency's running out of money to develop a vaccine for Zika virus. And this just as the news of the problems in Miami coming out. He said because it hasn't received the $1.9 billion President Obama requested in February.
we're going to rapidly run out of money if we don't get it real soon, because we're stretching it, borrowing money from other places to try and do those kinds of things. We're getting to that critical point very quickly.
Glenn Thrush, top of the hour, we heard Republican Governor of Florida Rick Scott complaining bitterly about the fact that Congress hasn't ponied up here, and now it's right there in Miami. Do we have a crisis, or is it still manageable?
I mean, we have a manageable crisis. I think, you know, by the way, when you hear Fauci, I don't think people realize that that Tony Fauci is really one of an American hero of the last 40 years. He played a critical role in terms of both the Ebola and the AIDS crisis mm-hmm. in this country. But I think, you know, President Obama called Congress out on this. They went on summer recess without dealing with this. They're essentially, the government will be able to patch things together. HHS is going to move some money around. I do think there was one very positive development out this week, and that is the vaccine seems to be very, very effective and is moving along on a very fast track.
Well, let's get going. We need it in Miami. Our thoughts are with you. Olympics open tonight in Rio. Glenn, if it were you on the Olympic stage, what's your event, my friend? What gold medal would you like to wear?
I would like to wear the buffet gold medal.
Hit the Olympic buffet. And Lisa, what's your dream? Would you be out there, I don't know, rowing in off Ipanema Beach?
I just want to get rid of this convention cold, but I'll take judo.
Judo?
Yes.
Lisa does judo. Jack, what's your sport, sir? Which gold medal do you want to stand for?
Scrabble.
Scrabble. Jack Beattie brings it all home, maybe to a nice, cool cabin in northern Wisconsin or right there in New Hampshire. Jack Beattie, great to have you with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Glenn Thrush, Chief Political Correspondent for Politico. Glenn, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Lisa Desjardins, Political Director of PBS NewsHour. Thank you, Lisa.
Always a pleasure.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.